This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Chances are pretty good you've never given a second thought to circumcision. It's common in the United States, particularly where we live. A group of protesters wants that to change. The Bloodstained Men and their friends are wrapping up a 17-day tour that included five stops in North Dakota to protest circumcision. They call themselves Intactivists. Main Street's Ashley Thornburg spoke with David Atkinson, the CEO and co-director of the Bloodstained Men and their friends. And note, if you're listening with kids who aren't yet ready for medical terms, there are a lot of them in this interview.
David, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
When did you become an intactivist?
That was probably about 3 years ago. I learned about foreskin 10 years ago when I was 19. And that's the first time I saw a picture of an intact human penis. And I immediately understood that the glands, the head of the penis, is supposed to be an internal organ. It's supposed to be warm and moist and protected all the time. So I spoke with my friends and family to warn them that if a doctor wants to cut off part of their child's penis, that they should not allow that. But it was only about 3 years ago when I attended the Genital Autonomy Symposium in Boulder, Colorado in 2014, when I learned a lot more about the foreskin and understood that foreskin amputation is far more destructive than I knew. And so I met many other intactivists at that symposium, and I started traveling with the Bloodstained Men that fall in 2014 in September.
When you say far more destructive, what do you mean?
The average adult foreskin has approximate surface area as this Bloodstained Men info card, this 3x5 card. And it's a double fold of skin, so if you fold it in half lengthwise and then wrap it around your fingers, then what you get is a replica of what would cover the head of the penis. The outer foreskin is basically an extension of the shaft skin, where the inner foreskin is a mucous membrane, like the inside of your lip or the inside of your eyelid. And then in between these two skin layers, you have the dartos fascia muscle tissue. It's the same muscle that's in the scrotum that responds to external temperature to bring the testicles closer to the body if it gets cold, for instance. And there are also lots of nerve pathways that terminate in Meissner's corpuscles. These are very fine-touch nerve receptors that exist in the ridged band in the tip of the foreskin. It's similar to the fingertips. You have ridges there and a densely clustered nerve receptors as well. Also in your lips and in the clitoral hood. And so this entire structure is totally destroyed when it's amputated. And then the head of the penis becomes an external organ, which it's not supposed to be. It dries out. It gets covered with a layer of keratin, which is basically a callus. And because it rubs up against the underwear all the time. And so not only do you have desensitization caused by the amputation of nerve endings, what you have left in the glands is further desensitized. So it's very destructive for natural sexual function.
What about the advantages to it? There are some doctors and parents who would argue that it is easier to maintain a circumcised penis, that the rate of UTI, urinary tract infections, is lower among circumcised men. Into adulthood, the female partner of a circumcised male has a lower risk for cervical cancer. How do you respond to those arguments?
To the extent that intact young boys have a higher rate of urinary tract infections, we expect that that is due to forcible, premature foreskin retraction. In a young child, the foreskin is not retractable. Often it does not become retractable until puberty. And so when doctors tell you that you should forcibly retract the foreskin and wash underneath with soap, many doctors have been saying that for several decades, and it's a very damaging thing to do. It would be equivalent to opening up your daughter's genitals and washing them with soap. Mucous membranes do not need soap. Even in the adult, you don't need soap between your foreskin and your glands. You can just rinse with water. But when you do it to a child, you're breaking this connective membrane, the balanoprepucial lamina, and that will cause an open wound, and then you're much more likely to be infected. So there have been no studies of urinary tract infections in boys that account for this factor, whether or not the boys are being properly cared for, by which I mean left alone to develop normally, or whether or not their genitals are being tampered with. As to the question of cancer in potential female partners, I would say that it is a very despicable idea that we should amputate genital tissue from one person in order to benefit someone else, especially someone who might not even exist, because the boy might grow up and not have any partners, or might grow up and be gay. The primary obstacle faced by foreskin advocates in the United States today is the American Academy of Pediatrics, whose 2012 circumcision policy statement has been condemned by doctors from around the world because it totally ignores the sexual and protective functions of the foreskin, which are documented throughout the medical literature.
It's less common, certainly in Europe and I believe in South America, too. Where it seems to be the most common is Middle Eastern countries, people still practicing an Islamic or Jewish traditions. And then in the U.S., and very specifically as you get into the north central part of the U.S., and I can't help but notice that the 17-day protest tour is really focused in that area as you're getting into North Dakota, Minnesota, Nebraska. Was that purposeful to choose this geographic location?
Yes. We try to reach all parts of the country because there are no communities in the U.S. where boys are protected from genital cutting. But we did want to reach the Midwest especially because the intact rate here is so low.
What's the response been so far on the tour?
We were in the Midwest 2 years ago in May 2015, and we received lots of heckles and middle fingers from passersby. And of course, some support. Everywhere we go, we receive thumbs up and middle fingers, but in different proportions. When we were in the Midwest 2 years ago, the anger outnumbered the support. But now, 2 years later, we have received much more support because societal awareness is changing. And people are much more aware that foreskin is a normal, important, healthy part of the human body and that intactivism is not something to be mocked. So we still do receive angry people. We had several heckles, especially in Bismarck. We had an excellent day in Dickinson. In Dickinson, North Dakota, the local human rights activists came out to join us. The Dickinson Press was there. It was generally a friendly day. In Bismarck, it was a little bit angrier. And then in Minot, we had a very strange experience. As soon as we arrived, the police department came and they announced that they have a totally unconstitutional local ordinance which prohibits the holding of signs in the public sidewalks. And so we were told that we could protest on private property, which is very strange because that's the opposite of what we hear in most cities. So we went to private property, to a nearby hospital, and protested there. And then eventually they kicked us off. So we went to the U.S. Postal Service, the U.S. Post Office, and we thought, well, fine here because this is federal property, but they told us to leave as well. So we just traveled from place to place and then eventually finished our protest at 3 p.m. as scheduled.
Going back to talking about, you said you get heckled sometimes. You get maybe honked at, maybe flipped off, maybe worse, I'm not sure. But talking about hurt feelings, do you think a lot of that is because on many levels, this is fighting tradition. This is fighting religious practices. This is something that you are going against, a deeply held religious belief. And in a lot of ways, that's harder to overcome than something that is strictly fact-based. Do you feel like that is part of the issue here with what you're trying to accomplish?
Religion certainly complicates things. In other parts of the world, in New Zealand, for instance, they used to do this. They used to cut the genitals of children just as much as we did in the United States in the early 1900s. And then the Health Ministry of New Zealand decided we're not going to do this anymore. And they did not have many religious groups there that were opposed to that idea, and so they just stopped doing it. So that is a factor. I think a lot of the anger in America comes for non-religious reasons. It comes because men are in denial about the damage caused by foreskin amputation. They have trouble coming to grips with the fact that part of their penis is missing, and so they lash out in anger at people who are sending them that message.
What are some of the risks of male circumcision?
the American Academy of Pediatrics statement in 2012, it claimed that the benefits outweigh the risks, but it only considered the risks of immediate surgical complications, such as bleeding or infection. Mm-hmm. It did not consider the harm inherent in loss of an important part of the penis. It did not give the foreskin any value. And so the risk of loss of that part of the penis is 100%, and it's very damaging to normal sexual function. The foreskin acts as a rolling bearing during intercourse, and when the foreskin is not there, a lot of lubrication will get stuck behind the coronal ridge in the head of the penis, and it will get drawn out into the air every time the man comes out of his partner. And so very quickly you have dry, painful, bloody intercourse, which is not a problem when the penis is working the way it was designed, because the foreskin retracts as the man inserts his penis, and then it covers the head of the penis again on the way out, and so the lubrication stays inside. There's a huge market for artificial lubrication in pharmacies in the United States. They don't have this problem in Asia and Europe and South America, where the men are intact and their genitals are functioning the way they were designed. There's also an issue that many men without foreskins have, where at the moment they reach orgasm, they feel too much of a painful sensation, and they immediately want to stop all movement. And this is because the glands contains neurons that are very sensitive to pain and temperature, whereas the foreskin contains these pleasure, fine touch nerve endings. And when the nerve pathways have been severed, they no longer connect to the inhibitory interneurons in the spinal cord, which turn off the painful sensation in the glands. So an intact man does not have this problem because he's feeling a lot of pleasure from his foreskin. But the man without the foreskin will experience what he perceives as too much pleasure, even though it's mostly a combination of pain and pleasure. And so this is why these men come and heckle us on the street, and they say, oh, if I had any more pleasure, I wouldn't be able to stand it. But they don't understand. It's the wrong kind of sensation. What they're missing is this fine touch sensitivity, and what they have left is this painful sensation from the glands.
How do we know that?
There was a study in 1996 by John Taylor. He studied the foreskins of several corpses, and he took cross-sections and looked at the Meissner's corpuscles, these densely clustered nerve endings. He measured the existence of them, and throughout the medical literature, there are discussions of the functions of the foreskin.
You talked about bloody, the possibility for bloody interaction on a penis and the possible painful sensation at the end, at the climax mm-hmm. period. I've never heard anybody talk about this before. Obviously, I'm not a doctor, but I am an adult. Mm-hmm. I have had a lot of frank discussions with my adult female heterosexual friends. It seems curious that I've never really heard anybody talk about that before.
Well, people are often not inclined to talk about the problems that they have. We hear adult women tell us, my son is circumcised and he's fine. And we respond to them, how could you possibly know? What son talks to his parent about his sex life? So your son could have all sorts of complications. Many people just think that sexual dysfunction is normal because that's all that they've ever known.
When it comes to genital cutting, certainly when it comes to male circumcision, male genital cutting, this is something that has been very common for centuries, and it has been very common across the globe. When it comes to females, definitely pockets of the world where it is practiced quite a bit more, and the side effects of female genital mutilation. We're talking about necrotizing fasciitis, endometriosis, tearing in the anal sphincter, the transmission of Hep B, Hep C, HIV. The vagina and the uterus can fill with menstrual blood. The complication rate among female genital mutilation is oftentimes fatal. Does the bloodstained men do any work in the broader community against genital mutilation across sexes?
We are totally opposed to the genital mutilation of any child. We focus our efforts on male genital mutilation and intersex genital mutilation because those are the children that are not protected in the United States, which is where we are operating. Intersex children are born with ambiguous genitals. It's not clear. They're somewhere on the spectrum between male and female. And often the doctors and the parents will get scared and they'll say, we have to make them conform to appearances that are more common. This is not a good idea to tamper with their genitals because, again, they are perfectly healthy. They do not need anyone cutting their genitals. They can decide for themselves how they want their genitals to function when they are adults. In very rare cases, there might be an intersex condition that requires treatment, but it is not common at all. So in the United States, we have, fortunately, a federal law that protects female children from genital cutting. And this is regardless of the motivations of the perpetrators. If they claim that they're doing it for religion or if they claim that they're doing it to benefit that child, it doesn't matter what they claim. It is a federal offense to cut the genitals of a girl. And the World Health Organization classifies four types of female genital mutilation. They range from clitoridectomy, where the external glands and foreskin of the clitoris are removed, to infibulation, where many things are removed and the vaginal opening is sewed up. And on the other end of the female genital cutting spectrum, they also include a ritual pinprick, or scraping, or cauterization, these things that do not amputate any sexual tissue but are still harmful. And all of that is totally illegal in the United States, which it should be. And some of those are more severe than amputation of the male foreskin, and some of them are less severe than amputation of the male foreskin. So the question is then, we have this 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution that's supposed to guarantee equal protection under the law. Why are some children being protected from genital cutting and others are not?
Do you feel like this is a conversation you need to be gearing more towards the medical community or more towards parents?
We're focused on educating parents because they are the decision makers right now. And it didn't always used to be that way. In the 1800s, whether or not a man got to keep his whole penis was decided by himself. And in the early 1900s, often the hospitals would just do it automatically. And so it was the hospital decision. But right now, we have this peculiar circumstance in the United States, where the parent is making the decision whether or not the man gets to keep his whole penis. And because of this, we can make a lot of progress by educating the cross-section of American population, because anyone is equally likely as anyone else to be a parent.
Are you a parent?
I am not.
Do you plan to become one?
It might happen someday. I'm not certain. I have many nieces and nephews who I enjoy spending time with.
Yeah.
But I would say about the medical community, if the American medical community was going to stop cutting children's genitals on their own, they would have done it decades ago when the rest of the English-speaking world did, when Canada and the UK and Australia and New Zealand, who used to have very high rates of foreskin amputation, said, this is not wise, and the rates now are very low. But in America, we have a medical system that is subject to a lot of perverse incentives. Instead of incentivizing healthy patients like they do in other parts of the world, the doctors are paid per procedure. And so they get paid every time they carry out a foreskin amputation, and so they continue doing it. Again, they don't want to acknowledge that they've been harming the genitals of children for 100 years, so it's easier to just claim that they should still be doing it.
Have you talked to your parents, frankly, about this?
Yes, I spoke
to
my parents.
Should I assume you're circumcised?
My foreskin was amputated when I was a child. I was too young to defend myself, and I would have preferred to keep my whole penis, including the natural lubrication and the retractable moving parts.
How do you talk to your parents about this?
I'm fortunate that my parents are very open-minded, and I just spoke to them even before I understood how a lot of other people don't want to talk about this. I just talked to them and they did not have a problem. They said, yeah, we're sorry that happened. And we did not know any better and no one told us. And so I don't really blame them. But if I was being born right now and all they would have had to do is Google functions of the foreskin and learn how important this body part is, and then they still had allowed that to happen to me, then it would be a different story. The children who are being born and cut right now, they're going to grow up and talk to their parents, and they're going to say, why did you not protect me? The information was all there. And their parents are not going to have an answer.
David, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
That was David Atkinson, the CEO and co-director of the Bloodstained Men and Their Friends.